Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution. And Tyler, you may fire when ready.
We've already talked about it a little bit. It's the hot topic of the day around the sports world. What other wild fights come to your mind when you think of egregious sports confrontations?
Well, the Malice at the Palace, I think for me, is still that I've witnessed and been alive for.
Right.
I'm aware that Juan Marichal once hit John Roseborough in the head with a bat, and I've seen like photos and stuff of that. Roseborough had blood gushing down. He had the crimson mask.
Yeah.
But he was like a martial artist, and they basically, even Marichal was the one holding the bat there, and they had to hold Roseborough back to protect Marichal from him.
Right.
Because he's just, you know, his head is busted open, but he's on the attack.
Right.
But I wasn't alive for that. But the basically the riot,
right,
with that Pacers Pistons game, the Malice at the Palace, is I think hands down the craziest, because that also involved fans.
Yeah.
And Steven Jackson and Ron Artest going up into the crowd and duking it out with guys.
Didn't they get suspended for the rest of the season for that one?
I'm pretty sure they did. The goons who started it also ended up having criminal charges brought against them.
Right.
Because it started with a guy throwing that cup of ice and hitting Artest in the face.
Yeah.
Now, I get it. You got to be better, and you can't go into the crowd and start a riot with fans. But at the same time, if somebody
look at it from a legal perspective,
a cup of ice comes from, when you're elevated and it's coming, boom, and it hits you right in the face. Like, guess what? That hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're not going to be happy about it.
Right.
But that's the biggest one. And then I think I remember the Marty McSorley when I think the other guy's name was Donald Brashear, when he took his hockey stick and slapped him hit him in the side of the head, and he got convicted of assault.
Yeah. Yep.
He didn't do any jail time or anything, but I think his career was pretty much toward the end anyway, because he was Wayne Gretzky's enforcer.
Yeah, he was his goon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but he ended up never playing again. He was suspended for a year, and that was basically the end of his career. And then there was another guy named, I think, Todd Bertuzzi.
Uh-huh.
And Dino Ciccarelli in the 90s that played for the Red Wings.
Mm-hmm.
He also got convicted of assault, too. So it seemed like in hockey, there actually have been like trials and stuff.
Well, because in hockey, obviously, fighting is allowed, and it's till they go to the ground, they let them fight it out, and you're not supposed to have the third person jump in there. So there's rules on how they fight in hockey. Well, if you go well beyond those rules, like slapping somebody in the side of the head with a stick, then it's like, okay, something more serious
is
going to happen.
Yeah, and that's even kind of like the contract between the players who play.
Right.
Is that they... Yes, there's fighting, and it's kind of this accepted part of the sport. But, yeah, once a guy gets another guy down and he's defenseless, they don't continue to beat on each other.
Right.
They'll stop.
Right.
And, so that's where even hit the guy in the head with the stick is like, oh, there's no one that's
right.
Feeling like that's acceptable.
Maybe Don Cherry.
Because he hit the because then Brashear, fell and hit the back of his head on the ice, and he
is nasty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So... And I think McSorley claimed he was tapping him on the side of the head to challenge him to the fight to begin with. Because Brashear had his back turned, too. Yep. That was the other thing with that.
Yep.
But, yeah, that one and then the Pistons and Pacers brawl was, you hope you never see anything like that again.
Was it 2004 when Clemson and South Carolina had their brawl?
That's another one. I don't remember the year, but that was ugly too, because that was one where helmets were being slung and stuff.
Wasn't that Lou Holtz's last game as a coach?
It was Lou Holtz was their coach. Was it? I don't remember if it was his last game, right? Because I don't remember the year. But that's another one.
I think it was
2004. Yeah,
that one got pretty.
That
nasty
one was
too.
Ugly. Yeah. That was actually uglier than last night's, because that was like basically every player every player was on the field.
That was both teams going at each other and guys getting kicked in the head and stuff.
Because, I mean, for the most part, other than Garrett and Rudolph, too. I don't think Rudolph was continued to like – he was going after Garrett also.
But, again, he had three guys – holding Garrett back, so he had the confidence there.
Well, yeah, but so other than those two, and then the other dude for the Browns that came and shoved Rudolph back on the ground from behind, like everyone else was trying to break that up,
right?
And so for the most part, we last night most in the the Padres Braves brawl in '84 is
that one too.
That's the greatest like brawl of all time,
right?
Like for the most part, everyone's trying to break it up and not have it escalate anymore. But yeah, that South Carolina and Clemson one was like, I don't think anyone was trying to break anything up there. But the Padres and Braves brawl is that's the greatest brawl ever.
Well, considering this happened last night, within the next couple days we're gonna have 10 greatest sports brawls lists somewhere, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, well, if number one has to be the Padres and the Braves, that one also involved fans.
It did. I didn't know that.
It wasn't as – that one didn't involve, like, players going into the stands, like,
right,
with Artest and Steven Jackson, but there were fans that definitely got involved,
right,
throwing beer on guys and everything.
Right. Okay, we were talking about it earlier that obviously Alabama doesn't necessarily control their own destiny anymore as far as making the college football playoff. How concerned are they going to be about style points over these next 3 weeks?
Roll Tide?
Yeah.
What – I don't, you know, I don't know how, if I don't think that matters with the style points. I think they're already set up and in position being number five to get in. And I don't know how much, when you think it's style points, the game at Auburn, it would be just win that game.
Yeah.
Western Carolina, of course, they're going to blow them away, even if they don't have, Tua. Like, if they win a close game tomorrow, yeah, maybe that would nick them a little bit, because I think, you know, the perception of Mississippi State would be, well, look at their record, they're not any good, but I bet Mississippi State is better than any of the teams that Utah or Oregon have left in the regular season,
right,
to this point.
Right.
You think, like, one of at the time when Mississippi State lost when they lost that home game to Kansas State, yeah, it felt like a really bad loss, but I mean, Kansas State's beaten Oklahoma now.
Yeah.
So they've lost to Auburn on the road. They've lost to LSU. They've lost at Texas A&M.
And Tennessee.
Yeah, and then they lost to Tennessee. But and other than that, with Mississippi State, it's like they have an embarrassing loss.
Right.
At the time, like the Tennessee game, that felt bad because that was the Vols' second win of the year. Their only other win was against Chattanooga. But all of a sudden, like, Tennessee's going to get bowl eligible.
Yep. I beat Vandy and Missouri too.
Don't they have to win one of those? Don't they?
Let's see.
Don't they have five wins?
Yeah, they have five wins, counting UT Chattanooga.
Yeah. So they just need to beat Vandy. That's been what their season has been all about anyway. They just need to beat Vandy.
Easier said than done, but at the same time, I think Vandy is a shell of itself right now.
Yeah, this isn't the same. At least somewhat competitive Vandy team that they've had. They've lost to UNLV this year, but they did follow up that loss with a win over Missouri. So
right
after getting humiliated by Florida last week, maybe Kentucky shouldn't feel so safe. Like Kentucky's a double digit road favorite tomorrow. I'm not sure I could get behind that. It's not like Kentucky scores a bunch.
Yeah,
to be laying that many points on the road.
Right, and let's see. They lost last time to Tennessee. Who was their quarterback last week? Was it Lynn Bowden again?
Yes.
Okay, so they're still going with that, I guess. Well, yeah, it obviously only gave them 13 points against Tennessee. It's only 7 against – well, no, they scored 20 – was that 29 or 24 against Missouri?
29.
29, that's what I thought.
And they had 0.0 here in Athens.
That's right. Moving on, the 5-5. Who will have more rushing touchdowns by the end of the calendar year? So by December 31st, Devontae Freeman of the Atlanta Falcons or Georgia opponents?
Devontae Freeman has one?
He has none.
He hadn't had a rushing touchdown yet?
Brian Hill got a touchdown over the weekend at against New Orleans.
And Georgia's opponents have none.
Right.
I could see Georgia maybe finally giving one up tomorrow. And then Texas A&M would be, they're probably more passing, would score one. Now Tech shouldn't score at all. You know, maybe a kick a field goal or two.
And Freeman is out for this Sunday's game against the Panthers, so he would only have six more games after that.
Yeah, I'd have to say, we're already, nine games in and he doesn't have any. We're also nine games in and Georgia's opponents don't have any, so it's a dead heat, huh?
Yep, pretty much.
The Falcons do have more games, though, so I'd have to say Devontae Freeman. There'll be more Devontae Freeman rushing touchdowns than Georgia's opponents.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll revisit that.
All right.
Bowl season isn't that far away. In fact, the first bowl games we played right about a month from now. I was watching that documentary the other day on ESPN. They do all these 150-year documentaries, and they did the one basically discussing the origins of bowl games and how we've gotten the college football playoff and everything like that. And, of course, the original intention of bowl games was to get people to travel after the holiday season, you know, around January 1st, to come from areas where it's typically cold to warmer places, Miami, New Orleans, Arizona, South Florida, or not South Florida, Southern California, that kind of stuff. And despite the fact that we have almost like 40 bowl games now, almost all of them are still in that southern region of the United States, with the exception of five. Can you name the five bowl games that are above the Mason-Dixon line?
Yeah, there's the one in the one in Boise. I don't know the names of them now, but so
that would be the famous Idaho Potato Bowl.
There's the one in Detroit that Tech lost last year.
The Quick Lane Bowl.
There's the New York Bowl, the Pinstripe Bowl, or whatever it is now.
Yes.
So that's three.
It's three.
I need
two more
that are above the Mason-Dixon line.
Yes.
Is that the Military Bowl?
Yes. Military Bowl.
That's one of them?
Yes.
And then there's not one in I got the one in Detroit already. There's not one in Ohio. Unless there's a new, is there, they didn't do that one in Wrigley Field. There was talk about doing one in Wrigley Field. I already got the Pinstripe Bowl. There's not one in Pennsylvania, is there? No.
Nope. Wrong end of the country.
I got to go back out west.
Yes, you do.
I got the famous Idaho. Are you counting? I guess, yeah, the one in San Francisco.
Yep, the Red Box Bowl.
Okay.
Santa Clara.
Yeah.
It's just like barely above that line.
But yeah, but I was like, you know, I don't think of that as like a frigid zone.
Right, right. You know? Of course, right, naturally warm there. I was reading up on this, apparently starting next year, we get the Myrtle Beach Bowl, which can be played at Coastal Carolina Stadium, and the Boston Bowl. It's going to be played at Fenway Park.
Oh, the Boston Bowl's coming next year?
That's what it said.
And the Vegas Bowl, it gets amped up.
Yes, it does.
Or ramped up, because you're going to have the SEC in it, and they're going to have that new Raider Stadium.
I kind of like Sam Boyd Stadium, though. It's odd.
Yeah.
In an odd way. It's unique.
Well, the and then I guess they're... So that whole Wrigley Field Bowl game is just kind of getting put on hold. Because I think what happened with that is these Big Ten teams that might have been tied into it said, we want to go south for the winter.
Well, there was several of those times. I think Northwestern played a couple like home games there, and you can only go one way on the field because the dimensions are so tight. Like the end zone that is in the outfield, like you're right up on the ivy at the edge of the end zone. So like there's not a runoff area to go out of the back of the end zone. It's not safe.
Yeah, they didn't need anyone running into a brick wall.
Right, so teams had to keep going in one direction.
Yeah.
And that's not right.
No, that was weird too. But I also I do think like the Big Ten teams that their bowl tie-ins are all, it's cold up there and they want to go, like, to the whole point of what you said bowl games were about was to,
right,
you know, go somewhere nice, make it a little vacation. And so most of the Big Ten teams are like, well, we don't want to, that's outdoors. We don't want to play that game.
That's why their one bowl up north is the Quick Lane Bowl.
Yeah, and that's in a dome at least.
Well, I think they're tied in with the Pinstripe Bowl too.
The Big Ten is?
I think they are.
I know the ACC's in. They probably are, yeah.
They
Big
might
Ten
be.
And ACC.
I can't remember. And the Military Bowl, I think that's typically like an AAC team versus usually one of the service
like
academies.
Navy. Yeah.
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 All right, final thing in the 5 at 5. I don't know if you've seen this video clip that went viral, I think yesterday, of this 11-year-old kid that won the year's supply of Chick-fil-A.
I have not seen that.
I'll play the clip for you when we're in a commercial break. This is an 11-year-old kid that sounds like a 40-year-old man from Buffalo, New York. He's in Buffalo, and he sounds like a grown man.
Oh.
I'll play it for you in a minute. Anyway, if you could pick one food, not a restaurant, but one specific food to get a year's supply of, what would it be?
Yeah, it's funny because Jeff and I just yesterday were talking about a Mount Rushmore of foods.
Okay.
And I had French fries. We both had French fries.
French fries are great.
I also had tacos. Good. And chips, like chips and salsa, cheese, yeah, dip, you know, verde, something like that. And then pizza.
Okay.
But I'd have to, I'd probably go with just French fries. I can be honest with you.
A year supply of French fries.
Yeah, if I could just like, if they're, you know, you wanted to offer me like French fries and whenever, yeah, I wanted some French fries. Yeah.
It's not bad. I'd probably do tacos.
Yeah. Yeah, tacos would be, yeah, that's, if I wanted to go with something that maybe had a little more.
Right.
You know, at least with tacos, I could get some lettuce, tomatoes.
Yeah, a little more,
some,
little more nutrition than fried potatoes.
Than just fried potatoes and probably like an actual sort of more meal instead of just a side.
Right. Hey, you know, if you eat enough fries, it'll fill you up.
Yeah, I'd probably go with tacos over pizza, but tacos.
So was that y'all's consensus Mount Rushmore of food?
Well, no, he had his and then I had mine. I think the one we had in common, that we both had French fries.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
Especially when they're salted correctly. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And fried to perfection.
Yes.
Good. In fact, I had some today at the Blind Pig. They have very good fries.
Yeah. Yes, they do.
Yeah. Their fries are top notch. All right. There it is. Today's 5 at 5 brought to you, as always, by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.